Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Insomnia Project. Sit back, relax, and listen as we have a calm conversation of approximately 26 minutes to help bring you to slumber, hopefully, or just to have you relax, whatever it is. We want to thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Marco Timpano.
I'm the barely awake Amanda Barker.
And I are sorry we didn't have an episode last week, Amanda.
I slept through it.
I guess you did, but we're here this week, so I hope you're here. Amanda, I don't have any set topics for today's episode other than to thank our listeners.
Well, maybe we'll just begin with our weekend.
Oh, sure.
So you have a lot of work in the world of podcasting.
That's right. I was in Montreal at the Quebec Writers Federation. I met a whole bunch of wonderful prospective podcasters.
The Quebec Writers Federation, yeah.
Laurie in particular. Mm-hmm. I did that with Linda Mora. She was my co-host, or we were co-hosting the workshop together, and that was really wonderful. And I cannot wait to hear some of the brilliant podcasts that are going to come forth from that workshop.
And that is Linda Mora of Getting Lit with Linda, which is such a fabulous podcast. If you're into books or reading at all, it's a Canadian literature focus, and I just love it.
She just recommended a book that you jumped on and said you're really enjoying
it. And I'm loving it. And it's so funny because I've had, as I've mentioned before, I love my library app on my phone, the Libby app. It hooks into your local library. It sources things from other libraries, and it allows you to listen to audiobooks for free. You can actually peruse magazines for free, and you can read books for free on whatever e-reader device you use, even if it's a phone, which I've done a few times. But generally, I use it for audiobooks, and I have a whole bunch of audiobooks ready to go, in fact, because we were driving to Montreal.
That's right.
And I love to listen to an audiobook as we drive. And so I have a lot of biographies because that's the type of thing. I like a nonfiction audiobook.
Sure, sure.
It's hard for me to get into a fiction audiobook, which is ironic since I narrate them. But in any event, I happened to download one from a discussion with her. And out of the 10 or so, I gave each one, you know, a couple of minutes, and then I have to decide if I like the person's voice.
If you want to invest your time into listening to it.
Yeah, if the content is resonating with me in that moment.
Sure.
You know, if I've done a lot of Brené Brown's or even Catlin Moran's, then I might not want a feminist self-help type of genre. I might want, you know. So anyway, I uploaded this book, Valley of the Bird Tale, and this is a very organic plug. I didn't really mean to be plugging it, but she's actually doing an interview with the authors at the end of this month.
She being Linda.
Oh, yeah, Linda. We're still on Linda. And so she was mentioning to me these two authors who got together to write this book. So anyway, it's called Valley of the Bird Tale, An Indian Reserve, A White Town, and The Road to Reconciliation.
Okay.
And I wasn't sure, you know, some of those things are quite heavy topics.
Sure, sure.
So I wasn't sure. But it's told in a very, I don't know how else to put it, a very listenable way.
Okay.
And it really hooked me. It's narrative, so I'm interested in the narrative of these people's lives. It's also very informative. And, of course, it's dealing with some what we call heavy subjects, but I think there's a real lightness to it and playfulness to it. And I got to be honest, I'm really enjoying it.
And who are the authors?
The authors are, this is important.
Amanda's going to get that.
Yeah, the authors are Douglas Sanderson, I believe, and Andrew, and now it's gone. Hang on. Andrew Stobo Snyderman. And why does it keep going?
Amanda's fiddling with her phone right now. I'll have it in our show notes.
Douglas Sanderson. I got it right. Yeah. So Andrew Stobo Snyderman and Douglas Sanderson wrote this.
And I'll have a link to that in our show notes.
Yeah.
And speaking of two, we had an eclipse of the sun and the moon this week as well.
What a week it's been, yeah.
We were in the direct path of that eclipse here in Toronto, but unfortunately the clouds did not allow for us to view it. We got a little glimpse.
Not when it was at its 99th percent. And I had a lot of eclipse envy.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm not an envious person overall, I don't think. You know, different people have different vices. Envy isn't usually mine.
Sure.
I've got lots of others, don't worry. But I had a lot of eclipse envy because I noticed on social media and so on, everyone, and of course the eclipse was very specific to location. So of course around the world, as so many of our listeners are, you know, that they weren't part of it.
Of course.
But for us here in what we call the Greater Toronto Area,
there was a lot of eclipse potential action happening. So if you were in Niagara Falls, in Hamilton, in Cornwall, in Port Perry, Port Hope.
Anything along that southern U.S. border, like the border between Canada and the U.S.
Sure.
Which meant, of course, on the other side. But it's a fairly small little path that an eclipse, you know, you can go 10 miles and be outside of the what they call the totality, right?
Right, right. See, and for me, celestial things like that do nothing. So I was neither here nor there with it. I'm not... I was saying this to Amanda last night. I was like, that stuff. Because we were talking about Halley's Comet. And she's like, do you remember Halley's Comet back in whenever it was?
I don't remember seeing it, but I certainly remember talking about it.
I don't remember. And to be honest with you, if it was in the zeitgeist back then, I wouldn't have paid much mind to it. Because like I said, celestial bodies aren't my thing. I know oftentimes Amanda will point out different galaxies or star clusters, and she'll name them, and I'll be like, okay.
Constellation,
yes.
I love the idea that I could see different galaxies with my own eyes.
If you concentrate, maybe you can.
I mean, in my mind, the galaxies of my brain. Yeah, I never heard this term totality before, and suddenly that's what everybody was talking about. It became a buzzword for us anyways in this past week, but... yeah, it was pretty cloudy, and we weren't going to get the full deal. And the full deal means it goes fully to night for a few minutes, the stars come out, and then it goes back into the daytime. So now I kind of want to have that experience in my lifetime, so I might become an eclipse chaser and go to, like, Spain or Iceland next year. I don't know. We'll see.
Have fun with that.
Or 2 years from now, whenever it is.
Okay, so you also dove into some Shakespeare this week.
I did. I want to talk about the museum, too.
What museum?
I was angling for Montreal so I could talk about the museum.
Oh, sure,
and
of
then
course.
You just bulldozed right over my... You're like, anyway, but now let's talk about the eclipse.
Sure, let's go to your
museum.
But
I'll talk about Shakespeare.
No, let's talk about your museum.
It's not my museum.
Well, the museum that you were forcing in this agenda.
It was a new museum for me. Okay. So for me, it was a big deal. But you weren't part of that because you were teaching at the Quebec Writers Federation while I had a lovely day by myself.
Okay, tell us about your museum experience.
So I had this I just wanted to describe to listeners my wonderful day. We had a beautiful, deep soaker bathtub in our hotel. We had a kind of older hotel. And we had a free breakfast. It wasn't great, but it was free. So I went down and got my two hard-boiled eggs and some cheese. And then I drew myself a beautiful bath. And I know probably most people's fantasies isn't eating hard-boiled eggs and cheese, but that's what they had. And I read a new book that I'm reading called The 100 Days of Lenny and Margot. I think that's what it's called.
But I thought you were going to say The 100 Years of Solitude.
No, The 100 Days of Lenny and Margot, which is an interesting Scottish book, or it takes place in Scotland anyway. So in a hospital in Scotland. So I got in maybe 30 pages, 50 pages or so of that. And then I went, okay, museum time. And I walked myself down to the Musée des Beaux-Arts, which is the Museum of Fine Arts in Montreal. And I'd never been. And that's pretty incredible because we've spent a lot of time in Montreal.
We have.
But I've never made it to the museum there, the Fine Arts Museum. And it was lovely. It was so lovely. They had an exhibit that compared the lives and works of Georgia O'Keeffe.
Which Amanda's a big fan of.
And I can't even remember his name.
Moore.
What's his first name?
Henry Moore.
Henry Moore.
Which I'm a big fan of. You went to the museum.
I know, and I don't remember. It was like O'Keeffe and Moore. No, his sculptures are interesting. He carved a lot from stone. That sound is Marco looking for his name.
What was the clicking?
Yeah.
Clacking, sorry.
Yeah. He carved a lot from stone, and he always wanted it to still look like the stone.
Henry Spencer Moore.
There you go. Georgia O'Keeffe.
I like when I say Henry Moore, you're like, Henry, is it Henry Moore? As if I was wrong.
Well, I thought that was an author too, Henry
Perhaps.
Moore.
I mean, Henry Moore's not a
Who
uncommon.
Wrote the yellow wallpaper? I feel like somebody wrote the yellow wallpaper.
I've never even heard that book.
It's a short story. I felt like that was somebody named Henry Moore too, but I'm also, as I mentioned, half awake or half asleep. Anyhow, I had a beautiful stroll through this museum, and it was lovely, and that comparative exhibit was lovely, and I happened upon a free tour.
Well, that's lovely.
So what happens, I love a guided tour, as we've established. I love audiobooks.
Right.
And so I will pay the extra $10 or whatever it is for the guided audio tour of something.
Whether that be a person or a headphone walk around.
Well, usually it's a headphone.
Right.
And so, and you press your language and make sure the headphones work and let it guide you and you go through the rooms or whatever. So that's what I was expecting, but they didn't offer that. That wasn't on offer. Instead, what they had is volunteers giving you really interesting insights into the works of these two authors. And so I just wanted to say, I got a guided tour by this lovely older British woman named Mary, and she was fantastic.
Awesome.
She knew so much about each, and she had interesting little tidbits of information, and that's what's interesting to me, those personal stories. And you're looking at me like you want to tell me who wrote The Yellow Wallpaper.
Yeah, I looked it up. It's not Henry Moore. The Yellow Wallpaper, original title, The Yellow Wallpaper, a story, is a short story by American writer Charlotte Perkins Gilman.
Moore.
No, there's no Moore in there.
I don't know. I don't know who I'm
Never even heard of this short story.
Okay. Why are you so angry about it?
I'm not angry, but...
All right.
I like how you thought it was Henry Moore.
Maybe it's Henry Miller, but there's an author of that time.
Mm-hmm. Well, Henry Miller...
Listen, I know a lot of people, and I have a lot of names that float in my brain.
Fair enough. So, you got to see Henry Moore, you got to see George O'Keeffe's works. Were there other works that you saw in that museum that you enjoyed?
Yeah, I learned about a Quebecois artist that I didn't really know, Ripoll?
Sure.
Jean... R-I-P-O-L-L-E? I might be saying it wrong.
Ripoll.
Apparently hugely influential in Quebecois art.
Oh, fantastic. That's art from Quebec, in case some international listeners are wondering what that word is.
Jean-Paul Rowe. I still can't say it. Can you say that?
Of course. Ripollet.
Oh, yeah, that's Italian. R-I-O-P-E-L-L-E, Jean-Paul Riopel.
Riopel, sure.
Ah, but really influential.
Oh, wonderful.
I guess somewhat abstract painter from the 60s. And really interesting stuff. And they've got a lot of his work there. And he's part of that whole movement of Quebec in the 60s and 70s, like alongside Leonard Cohen, and who is obviously a famous poet and then later on singer. But just so many of the artists of Quebec of that time, which I thought was really fascinating.
Singer-songwriter, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. There's a big mural on one of the condo buildings in Montreal that we drove by, of Leonard Cohen, that is. And so you had a great time at the museum.
I did. I just wanted to share that because a new museum is a new adventure. And they're some of the best adventures, museums, because you feel like you're going inward, you're going internally. You know, when I was a child, I didn't really get museums. I liked going. I liked the big spaces and the high ceilings, but I didn't really understand what was to be gained from just staring at art or, you know, paintings on a wall or sculptures. But these days for me, it's an adventure into an artistic spirit and a creative movement, someone's life. And that's what's interesting to me.
I took our niece and nephew to the Bata Shoe Museum.
How was it?
During their spring break. It was a neat museum, but I don't think the kids had much patience for the shoes, all the shoes after a while. They were like, okay, how many pairs of shoes can we possibly look at?
And kids in museums, it's a hard sell.
Sure.
Anyway, which is why most museums find other ways to draw families in and engage the kids. As I was there, they had a whole engagement area for the kids where they were making paintings and sculptures out of pine cones.
It was that's cool.
Pine cone thing. Yeah.
I would have loved that as a kid.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Mm-hmm. And that's what art should be, fluid. It shouldn't be something to just stare on a wall, because at some point in someone's life, it was movement and it was expression and it was thought and emotion and feeling. So I think you need to find ways to bring that to people. That's why the immersive exhibits are so powerful and I think so popular, like Immersive Van Gogh.
Sure. Immersive.
Kleminsky, I think.
Gustav Klimt.
Yeah.
There's a Klimt immersive.
I can't get anyone's name right today. Frida Kahlo. I did an immersive Frida Kahlo. But the Van Gogh one, out of all of them, that we did immersive Disney, mm-hmm. which is a tour into Disney animation. I do think the immersive Van Gogh at the end of the day, and I hope I'm not making any mortal enemies with this, is still my favorite, personal favorite. Although the Disney one is really interesting.
Yeah, it was a pretty cool knockout, that one.
And even for an adult, you know, obviously it's geared more to families in terms of the marketing, but I think as an adult, it was a very interesting adventure into the animation of Disney.
Now, we mentioned this earlier in the show, you've been working with some people in Shakespeare. Would you see a immersive Shakespeare if they had that experience?
I don't know how you would do that. I mean, isn't Shakespeare meant to be immersive? Isn't that a good Shakespearean play is, in a way?
Yes, but not all his works. But imagine if you went in and you heard excerpts from all his works with people around. And
there is a very famous show called The Complete Works of William Shakespeare, which I saw in London.
Was that good?
In the West End. Yeah, it's funny.
Okay.
A lot of shows have sort of mimicked that formula.
Gotcha.
Where it's, let's do big things fast, and they'll be funny if they're fast, if everybody knows what's happening, because we're doing it at this farcical, frenetic pace.
Right.
That's essentially what it was. But okay. I do remember, I mean, it was many years ago that I saw, but I do remember enjoying it.
I know it came into town. I should have gone to see it when mm-hmm. it was in town. But, yeah.
And there's a Harry Potter sort of version of that.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, there was a show called, it was a Tom Stoppard play called Cahoots. I don't want to say the Scottish play, but anyway, it has like Cahoots, the Scottish play, something Hamlet. It's a pretty famous play, but inside of it, there's a play within a play.
Okay.
And that is called the 15-Minute Hamlet.
Okay.
And I remember my University Theater did just the 15-minute Hamlet as a lunchtime show.
Oh, that's neat.
By Tom Stoppard. Tom Stoppard, who unfortunately left us this week.
Right. Oh, this week?
Yeah, this past week, okay. I think.
You know, it's interesting. I love the idea of seeing a quick show during your lunch, especially if you're like, you know, oftentimes you're working and in a place where you haven't worked before or a new location and you don't know too many people or you don't feel like having lunch with people.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine being able to eat your mm-hmm. lunch and watch a show. For me, that's a wonderful, wonderful experience, which I have yet to do.
But there are places that we know of that do that.
Yeah.
For example, the Lunchbox Theater in Calgary
mm-hmm.
Has had a long, long
history,
yeah, of doing exactly that, mm-hmm. lunchtime shows. I don't know if they offer evening shows as well.
I don't think so.
No, just lunchtime?
Yeah.
There used to be one downtown Toronto that did.
Oh, there was?
Yeah. It was called the Solar Stage. And what happened was they offered lunchtime adult shows. And by adult, I just mean not family shows, but,
right.
you know, a one act, a 40-minute or whatever show right downtown, like at Bay and Queen or downtown. And
in the heart of the city.
Yeah. Like in the underground, sort of, like where we have a big underground tunnel system. It was in there. And because they were, you know, the rent is high, as it always is, they also on the weekends offered children's shows. And what happened was the children's shows became more popular than the lunchtime shows. And so then they had two spaces, one for children and one for adults. But the children one basically won out and they had to close the adults.
Yeah, because I only know that as a kids theater.
Exactly.
So I didn't know it as an adult lunchtime theater.
It was my first professional theater gig in Toronto and my second ever professional theater gig ever in my life. And, you know, I was so excited. I was getting paid to do theater. It was pretty low budget. But anyways, and everybody would say to us, Solar Stage, oh yeah, they used to do the lunchtime shows. Do they still have that theater? So I heard about it a lot. But it didn't exist by the time I was there. So that's been a long time now.
Wow. Wow. I remember years ago, I meant to tell you this morning, I auditioned for a Shakespeare play. A outdoor Shakespeare play.
Oh, yeah?
At Earl Bales Park, I think. This is when I was in high school, so many, many years
ago. Oh, I think you told me your drama teacher took you and someone else.
And my best friend at the time.
Yeah.
For a role that had two lines.
Okay.
It was for Fleance, was the name of the character mm-hmm. in one of the plays. I couldn't even tell you which one.
I think
one.
That's a history play. I think that's like a Henry the Fourth or Fifth.
It could be the Scottish play. I remember my lines.
Okay.
The moon is down, and I have not yet seen the clock, sir. And then...
That might be the Scottish play.
And then
yeah.
the next line is, I take it as later, or something like that. I still remember the lines.
They were going to hire somebody for two lines?
Yeah. Wow. Like, it was outdoor. Like, they were going to hire a kid, right? So, you know, the opportunity to go audition for Shakespeare...
Right.
You know, in high school was really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And me and my best friend Danny at the time went and... neither of us got it, but...
I wonder who booked that.
I know. I wonder who booked it as well. I remember my teacher saying to anglicize my name because she was worried that they wouldn't hire me because they thought I was too ethnic for the part.
That's insane.
Yeah,
and that teacher was also Italian?
Yes.
So that's why she thought that, I think. Yeah.
No, she knew... I think there was more to it.
That era of people were told to do that, right?
I think she knew more about the director and stuff.
I see.
So yeah, so I think it was. I think it was a little more complex than that.
And did you anglicize your name?
I think when I said it, I didn't because I didn't remember to do so. So who knows? Who knows?
But what would an anglicized version of your name be?
I think Mark is what I was supposed to
Mark
say.
Mark Timms.
I guess I don't know. I mean, it was so long ago, Amanda. Like Amanda's trying to, she's trying to Nancy Drew my.
No, I'm
my
not trying to Nancy
a
Drew
little
anything.
Bit.
No, I'm just interested in that. That's an interesting story to
mm-hmm.
me.
What's more interesting is I remember the lines from the audition from in high school.
Mm-hmm. I remember my monologue from an audition that I think I did in high school. And I was reminded of it yesterday because it was a Midsummer Night's Dream, and I heard it quite a few times yesterday as I sat watching, people audition for Midsummer Night's Dream.
Why did you pick that as your audition piece?
Gosh, I don't really know. I don't really know. Of the ones back then, it was because we were given five, I think.
Oh, I see.
So you had to pick one out of the five. And I don't think I wanted to do anything super dramatic. I also wanted something that was age appropriate.
Okay.
And the four lovers, Hermia, Helena, Demetrius, Lysander in Midsummer Night's Dream, are generally considered young, in their 20s. So I was, 17 or whatever. So that's probably why I chose it.
That's pretty neat. Yeah.
Yeah. But it, like a song, those things stay in your brain, right? As a child. Like,
sure. Of course.
Your brain still, like, you remember these two lines, mm-hmm. yet you've done thousands of auditions since then, and you wouldn't know the lines of any of them.
I remember my first audition in grade school for the Christmas play.
Oh, wow.
Where I got to play Shepherd Number 3. I got the part.
Nice.
And so I
nailed
said,
that one.
You know, that's a Shepherd Number 3. I think I've mentioned it on the podcast before, a very important shepherd. Because Shepherd Number 3 says we will follow the stars. And mm-hmm. so it was because of Shepherd Number 3 that the shepherds knew where to go. And then I had to say the line, perhaps, which my father thought I said craps. And I'm like, why would a shepherd say craps? It doesn't make sense, especially a biblical shepherd. I don't think there was a content warning for the nativity play that I did in grade school, especially because I was 8, maybe.
The shepherds were gambling. they ducked out of the area just to... I shouldn't even say this. I don't want to offend anyone.
No, fair enough. Well, speaking of which, let's wrap up this episode so we don't offend anyone as we approach our 26th minute. Amanda,
sure.
Thank you for regaling us with your adventures in museums and, mm-hmm. and literature.
Well, you're very welcome. And when in Montreal, go to Musée des Beaux-Arts or Museum of Fine Arts. Definitely go there because it's... just an interesting exhibit, and you and I will have more about Georgia O'Keeffe and her art and life fairly soon.
That's right. Until then, we hope you were able to listen and sleep.